As summer trudges along, I am chomping at the bit to have my own summer get started. I shared before that my romp through our warmer months has been slowed by a post-surgery recovery period. It is what it is, and it will eventually pass. But it has had me shackled to a schedule of doing nothing for what seems like years now. I bring this up because a part of what I expect my summers to provide me with is an opportunity to go to places that I hold to be special, where I've had experiences leading to cherished memories, or places to which I feel an attachment. Many of these places I think of as my secret places, locations known to me in a way that they're not known to others. True, it's possible, even probable, that most of these places have been visited by others, and have strong connections for them as well. That notwithstanding, I have been delayed this summer in finding the comfort and joy that some of these places typically afford me. However, there's still a lot of summer left. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Patrick McManus had a story about secret places. It's probably one of my favorite McManus stories. Here's some of what that story says. All my life, I have had secret places. I like secret places. They make me feel smug and superior, two of the really great feelings. I have about 3 dozen secret places scattered around the country. Some are nothing more than small, gravelly beaches. Others are entire mountain range valleys and even mountain ranges. Often I come across other people in my secret places. They, of course, have just as much right to be there as I do. It's very irritating. And that's something to consider about secret places. Unless it's private property, well, it just might be someone else's secret place, too. But really what makes it a secret place isn't just the place. It's the experiences that happened and the memories that were formed in that place. One of my buddies is, even now, at a place that's very special to him. I doubt seriously he's ever thought of it as a secret place, but the connotations that go with secret places, as defined by McManus, are something that he almost certainly ascribes to that spot. Whatever the term you give to such places, we all have such places that are near and dear to us. One of the very first places I can remember thinking of in this fashion was the old farmstead that my grandfather and his brother owned. It had been in the family since the late 1800s. I don't know how many actual acres were a part of that parcel, but it was a pretty big chunk of land. It had grassy hills, a couple of ponds, a cluster of limestone buildings, and a heavily wooded creek bottom that meandered along the eastern border. It was 5 miles from town, which was just far enough to feel remote, but close enough to make access a doable thing on a very regular basis. From the time I was old enough to have memories, Grandpa would load me up and take me out there at every possible moment. In that place, from early childhood through my junior high years, I learned to shoot and trap and fish and explore. I caught raccoons and possums, shot rabbits and all sorts of birds that Grandpa deemed expendable. I caught bluegill, bass, and catfish on a weekly basis for years, at least during the summer months. I climbed limestone bluffs and really large oak and cottonwood trees. It was a marvelous place to experience a good bit of my growing up outdoors as a child, and it was very much the first place I had secret place feelings about, even if I didn't think in those exact terms back then. Another truth about secret places is that they can change, either an actual change to the land or your perception of that place. There was a tree-lined stream bed that served as a storm drain. It emptied into an underground culvert that led to the river at the edge of town that ran through the middle of the block I grew up on. Prior to the age of 7, this tree-lined stream bed felt like the wilds of Africa to me and my friends. Seeing it later as an adult, well, that feeling just wasn't the same. However, at age 5, it was where I wanted to spend all my time, and it felt absolutely wild and untamed. An example of the other type of change is Cedar Bluff State Park in west central Kansas. There is a reservoir at the heart of Cedar Bluff, and during my college years, the water level was always low. There was some extremely heavy timber and brush extending several miles out along its northern shore, and I spent a lot of time hunting and trapping those timbers in limestone canyons. Often it was only me, which very much gave it a secret place sort of feel, and some of my best outdoor memories happened there. After I graduated, the state decided to up the water level considerably and recreate the lake as a fishing paradise. As a result, those areas that were so special to me then are now under a considerable amount of water. One more Kansas example from my youth, Shoemaker's Pond. It's no exaggeration to say that at one point, say between the ages of 14 and 22, I had access to over 100 farm ponds scattered across north central Kansas. I always had a place to fish. Far and away my favorite, and it's not particularly close, was a pond owned by a farmer named Merle Shoemaker. That pond very much had the feel of a secret place. It was close to a mile from the nearest road, and that nearest road was a lightly used dirt road at that. Not many people knew the pond was there. It was a large pond, too, completely surrounded by cottonwoods, and it had some of the largest bass and bluegill I've ever seen, from a farm pond anyway. Because no one knew it was there, it also had a lot of fish. My fishing memories of that pond are some of my fondest fishing memories. We'd go out there for the weekend and camp and fry fish over the campfire. It was a glorious way to live. The wee in that is a very good friend of mine. He and I used to talk about buying and owning that pond someday. Fact is, we still talk about it. I doubt that I've been there in the last 30 years, but the pond's still there. I look at it from time to time on Google Earth, remembering all those very special days in a very special secret place. Coming to Alaska, to Non-Dalton specifically, in the early 1990s, gave me access to some really cool secret places. My favorite place to fish in the whole world is on the western side of Lake Clark. It's my favorite place for a number of reasons, one of which is that it produces monstrous northern pike. The parcel of land is owned by a friend, and I camped and fished there a bunch during my years living in Non-Dalton, and I still nurture hopes of making it back someday, but with my family along to experience it as well. There was another fishing spot there, Horseshoe Bend on the New Halen River. During the month of April, the river level would be low enough, probably it's still that way, to allow access by ATV along the shore. The early spring fishing was always fantastic, with dollies and grayling and rainbows. With the lengthening daylight, I'd finish teaching school, throw some food, beverages, and my fishing gear on the Suzuki, and along with my dog Tacona, saddle up and head down for hours of world-class fishing. Almost every time, it was only me, unless I invited someone to come along. Horseshoe Bend was a terrific secret place. Since coming to Dillingham and Bristol Bay, I've come across a number of other spots that I think of as secret places, fully aware that others likely use and appreciate them too. There are a couple of things that help them to feel like secret places, though. Alaska has so few people and things are so remote that it's just harder to get to a lot of these places, which, by way of simple mathematics, likely means fewer people go there as opposed to some of my lower 48 secret places. Also, I've only rarely, if at all for some spots, seen anyone else there, so during my times at these places, they very much seem like secret places. So, where are some of these spots? Well, my 5 acres of land on Snake Lake is one such place, and one that I felt deprived of this summer because of this whole post-surgery stuff. I have a lot of things I want to do up there this summer, and I haven't been able to get there once yet. Yes, there is still time, but I'm ready to get the party started. There are several particular places on the Ungavainik River. I've only been on the river maybe a half dozen times, but it can feel like one of the most remote places on Earth, and one of the most scenic as well. Specifically, I can think of one straight stretch with a rocky bluff on the south side. You could convince me, with very little effort, that that spot is one of the best in the world for grayling, both in size and number. I love standing in the river there. A few miles further down is a really large gravel bar that's just one of my favorite places in the world to camp. In those times when I've been on the river, to my knowledge, no one has been within a whole bunch of miles of me, so those spots very much feel like secret places. There are others. A slough up on the Nishigak, from which I've taken 4 bull moose in the past 5 times I've been there. Kickertalik Lake on the Nishigak Peninsula is one of my favorite spots on the whole earth, and I have been blessed to be there a fair number of times in the last 5 or 6 years. A bay over near Togiak that I've spent many fine weeks in May looking for a spring bear. All of these and more I think of as some of my secret places. Do you have any such places of your own? I'm betting you do. Here's my advice. get out there and enjoy them in as much as you can. Never take them for granted. I know as soon as the doc says I'm good to go, I plan to do that very thing myself. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.